Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Hi, Sarah.
Yeah, hello there.
And hello, Christopher.
Good day.
Good day to you. Now, we all love sport in some form or another. Whether we keep up with it day to day or dial in when the big global events come around, a sporting event can encapsulate us like few other things. Sport can bring the best and worst out of people and can even sully or aid international relations. Today, we're answering this question. Is sport more than just a game?
So I had quite an interesting experience not very long ago. Went to a Premier League game at Brentford FC.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a big football fan, but I went along to this game. And firstly, I'll say I enjoyed myself greatly. Didn't win, but it was very, very good fun, and I loved being part of the crowd and all that good stuff. But something that really shocked me was every now and then there was some really nasty behaviour.
Every now and then, blimey, it's about widening those gaps. Usually, it's every few seconds.
Well, and especially there was some children behind me, and I'm talking, I would say under nine.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say maybe 13, 14. And I'm like, come on.
No, we're talking children, primary school children, definitely
actual
primary school.
Okay.
Using the most obscene language,
like
language that even I personally, I'll drop the odd, F-bomb here and there, but this was seriously, some of the most obscene language. Directed at specific players, that the referee and the mother was with them, and she was absolutely full of rage and vitriol and screaming obscenities at the ref. And I just thought, my goodness, I am not gonna say it's just a game, because I know it's not that simple, but I thought, come on now, like, this is a bit much.
Did you turn around and say, oh, could you just calm it down a bit, please?
She would have torn me limb from limb if I had done that.
You wouldn't be here to tell the tale.
You chose the wrong West London team. Go down Fulham, there's a lot less of that.
Is that right?
Well, generally speaking, but you can still find it. You can find this at any football ground in the country.
Exactly.
In the country. It's funny, though, you say this, because an Aussie mate of mine lived here for a number of years. And he went to the first football match, and he said, it's quite, would virile be the word to use?
Vitriolic?
Vitriolic, perhaps.
Really
virile?
Nasty.
What is virile?
Virile
mean?
Is a sex thing.
Yeah. Is it? Well,
you would say about
a virile young man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well,
potent.
Yeah, maybe I meant vile. But yes, I've just looked up virile. Having strength, energy, and a strong sex drive. To be honest, that does describe a lot of football fans. I would argue they're a virile bunch, and it explodes on the terrace.
Oh.
Oh, this is going downhill so quickly.
I do apologise, everybody, if I was really apologetic. It can be quite vile. And he hadn't witnessed this much at Aussie sports before, because I think it's more of a jolly affair at some of those ones. I think football is, you wouldn't get that at rugby so much, or you certainly don't get it at Wimbledon.
Or cricket.
At the tennis. Or cricket. You can get a bit of banter and a bit of, a bit of toing and froing, but it's not like it is at football. And, they're chanting, "You're shit," and you are. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, all this. And he was telling me this, and I was ready to apologize. And he just went, "Oh, mate, it was awesome." he was just like, "Yeah, we don't have anything like that in Australia." He absolutely loved the kind of
passion.
Yeah, I suppose, and all that kind of stuff. Now, perhaps he's looking at that in a certain way, but I know what you mean. Chris, you and I have been to football on many occasions, and sometimes the reaction of supporters is quite a lot. But we don't want to just focus on football here, sport in general. The question is sport more than a game? Well, for those Brentford supporters and other football supporters, because it's not just Brentford, of course, don't want to single out them.
Most of them were having a great old time, by the way. It was lovely.
Yeah,
I had a great time.
that you had a great time. You've also been to see Liverpool play at Anfield.
I have, yes.
A bit more of a prominent venue, of course.
Yes.
But what do you think, Chris? Is sport more than just a game? Because in other sports as well, we can see people getting sort of a bit het up and really, I don't know. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a brilliant form of escapism, isn't it? Mm. That actually, like, kind of the stresses and strains of normal life or your job or, you know, family or friend, like, or whatever is just a bit much. I definitely have it as a form of escapism or a form of, like, I just need a, you know, if I get an evening on my own, the first thing I'll just do is put on some football. And I'm sometimes not even watching it, but it's this form of, you know, yeah, it's great to watch. I love it. It is escapism. And I think it's always been a bit like that, hasn't it? Like I did, again, as we do, a little bit of research before. And that's what the Romans used it for. They used gladiatorial things. It was all this thing of entertaining your populace. So like keeping us entertained and distracted and away from the problems of real life. So I do think it is more than that. And there's loads of positives about it. I mean, I used to work in my previous career with the UN and we used to partner with the FA and we'd use football as a vehicle for positive messaging. And you can see a lot more of that happening around sports now, whether it's around fighting racism or homophobia or misogyny or things like that. Like it brings people together in a brilliant way. And there was a particular story that we loved around Mo Salah, the Liverpool footballer, mm-hmm. who is a Muslim. And there is this chant from the Liverpool fans about if he scores an extra few, we'll become a Muslim too. Like they didn't mm-hmm. care where he was from, what religion he was. It brought everyone together. And it was this kind of equalizer. Who cares where you're from? Like we're all on the same team or not. The problem is when they're not on your team. Mm. I just think I think sport is incredibly important to society and it has very positive and very negative effects on that equally as well.
Sure, but all that stuff you've said there, Chris, I take it. But do you not think it's ultimately an illusion?
In what way?
Well, in that when you say it brings everybody together, everybody's people are, you know, it's a leveler or whatever. Well, we see that by some of the chants, by some of the actions. I mean, we are just focusing on football a little bit here, but you can see that actually it can also be used as a vehicle for those who maybe don't think that. Now, that could be a societal problem, one could argue. But I found during the European Championships in the summer, England obviously were beaten by Italy in the final, and I was at the match. And I'm not talking about all the sort of the nastiness that went on. I just remember thinking, as a younger man, I was always desperate for England to win a tournament. Mm. And I still would obviously love to see England win the Euros or the World Cup. But I honestly used to think years ago, like if England win the World Cup or something, I just think like it will, you know, the
sun will change.
Yeah, the sun will shine a bit brighter, you know, like people will earn a bit more money, the minimum wage will increase, will suddenly...
There'll be world peace.
Yeah, we'll reach utopia. So, and in that stadium, in Wembley Stadium against Italy, when England were a few kicks away and the penalties went Italy's way and they won, I just remember thinking... After the semi-final, I was also at that game. England beat Denmark and went through to their first final of a tournament since 1966. And it was this great wave of euphoria. And I remember coming out the stadium and, you know, a few hugs with a few friends and all that. And it was just like, oh, brilliant. Right, okay. Which train am I getting home? I'm working tomorrow. Okay. Oh, that was great, though. That was nice. And off I went. And then the next week or whenever it was when England played the final, again, you leave the stadium, you sort of heads, you know, you're looking down at the floor and so on. You go, okay, right, how am I getting home? Which train am I working tomorrow? It's not the million miles. I just remember thinking, it really doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? Like it would give you a little bit of a spring in your step, but it's like listening to a good tune on the radio or a crap tune on the radio. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's all about that spring in the step or not for me.
But
and this is someone who loves football. Yeah. I work in it.
So I totally empathize with what you're saying, but I also think it was in 2018 when England got to the semi-final of the World Cup in football. Mm-hmm. I felt way more excited and happier about that. Like, I feel like I had much more an emotional
reaction. It's a festival of football. So you could say this. To me, it's like going to Glastonbury.
But
you go
I'm
to Glastonbury for the weekend, you're enraptured, if that's the right word.
I mean, all
with virile people.
But maybe all entertainment's illusion then. Like maybe, do you know what I mean? Movies and TV. Like maybe
everything
all of
is meaningless.
Yeah, maybe we're just in the dream of some giant. I don't
we're
know.
We're just in the Matrix.
But my question around the World Cup thing was around, I wonder if you had such a mute reaction to it because we're on the back of the last 18 months. Like it's impacted us in different ways. But because I definitely was way more excited about 2018 and, you know, us finally beating Colombia on penalties than I was about the last World Cup or the last tournament.
Yeah, but that's a, but the overall point is what I'm saying. I think that when that sort of victory was, you know, you could almost reach out and touch it, and then it was obviously taken away. I remember thinking, yeah, like I just, it was almost like a eureka moment for me. And maybe that's getting older or something, but I remember just thinking, yeah, I don't really think this matters that much. But I don't mean that in a negative way at all.
Yeah.
I really thought, do you know what? No, this is all about just having a bit of cheer. Essentially escapism, what you said. Yeah. I think it was it Arrigo Sacchi, the former Italy manager, who said football, and you can extrapolate that out to sport, is the most important of the least most important things.
Mm.
And I totally agree with that, because the famous quote or misquote, if you like, from, was it Bill Shankly, the former Liverpool manager, is football's not a matter of between life and death, it's worse. He's actually misquoted on that. He didn't mean that. A lot of people think...
Well, yeah, it was.
He wasn't saying that it was, oh, well, people, you know, born or die or someone. No, 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 football's more important than that. He was actually suggesting quite the opposite. And he was, as I say, slightly misquoted for those who know that quote. But what about what sport could do? You know, Chris, you talked about it kind of galvanizing people. I mean, there's been a number of stories before, and I can't particularly pinpoint one in my mind's eye, where you have communities around the world, you know, are unhappy with each other, let's say, and they set up a sporting event, and it can unite people. It can be a tool for great things like that. Did you, you know, when you were working at the UN, you said you used football as a tool for kind of social good or whatever. What was your experience with that?
It was incredible. I remember, again, working with the FA, so it was credit to them as well. They gave us something like, I can't remember, 700 football shirts. And we'd go to refugee camps in the Middle East full of Syrian refugees and put on sports tournaments, and they'd be wearing the kits, and it would just bring them some sort of escapism from that normal life. It actually brought a lot more happiness to them, and they could come together around something. And I think that is the beauty of the illusion or the escapism. Actually, it brought a lot of joy, and it brought these guys together, you know, that we're just having a crap time, to be honest. I mean, the famous example is it the Christmas on World War, First World War,
where
actually the German and the British or the Allied soldiers put down their arms and played football in the snow. Like you said, like it can do that. I guess it probably can also have a negative effect as well. But
yeah, sure.
I wonder if part of it is, though, the aspect of play. You know, when we're children, we play games, we play imaginary games, we play with toys, sports. And as adults, we don't have that many outlets for that kind of, you know, it's still good for us to play. And sport is something where it still feels like it's a sort of legitimate adult thing to do. Is, you know, if someone says, oh, yeah, like I'm on a football team, or yeah, I play tennis once a week.
A bit different from, do you want to come around and play Lego? I'm four.
Exactly.
Look, on a Saturday morning, I play cops and robbers.
It's funny you said that about Lego, though. You know, Lego has actually recently really branched out into the adult market, and they now make them specifically, you know, like grown-up stuff, rather than, you know, just, I haven't played Lego in a long time, but they are specifically targeting adults as well as children. Okay. Because, again, there's that thing of, we need to play. So I wonder if, like, that's kind of what binds people together when they, for example, play football, the classic one, that it does kind of, have that elevating effect.
Well, there is certainly a level, and I'm not talking about big sporting tournaments now. I'm talking about that when you do take to the sports field, whether it's rich or poor, you know, someone who's, I don't know, famous or a high position in society or someone who isn't, there is that leveling off, of course. And I do find that quite intriguing. But the other sport I find intriguing about this, is it more than just a game, is actually rugby. And with rugby, there was a program, I think, on Sky called School of Hard Knocks, and they took young men who were in prison or juvenile prisons, and basically got them playing rugby.
Mm.
And what I think rugby in particular, way more than football, is really good at is literally, but also sort of, I suppose, metaphorically or emotionally, knocking off edges off young, angry you know, disadvantaged men, particularly. Yeah. I think it's brilliant for that, because with football, football's good. And I remember Ian Wright did, you know, ex-Arsenal legend Ian Wright. No, he's still an Arsenal legend, ex-Arsenal player, sorry. Ian Wright did a one where he went around juvenile prisons and got them to play football. But I think there's something about rugby where when I think it does, especially young men, really good to know that they're not the strongest person in the world, if you see what I mean. Which is why a father figure is very, very important, of course. And I think that when people play rugby, you find out pretty quickly that you're not invincible. There's no hiding on the rugby field, is there? But Sarah, you know rugby better than I do, because you're quite interested in it, and you certainly go and watch it a little bit. What do you think then with rugby? Because very different to football. You don't have the kind of nastiness and all. But do you feel that people treat it more than just a game?
I do think it's more than just a game. And I think, I don't know what it is, because, you know, as I've said before, you know, I'm from Wales and we take rugby seriously in Wales.
Like to get one over the English, don't you?
Well, it's a thing. It's, who is it, Stereophonics? As long as we beat the English.
That's right, yeah.
You know, it's not just about the literal, and you could say this about a lot of sports, it's not the literal throwing of the ball and the tackling. Mm-hmm. It's what it represents.
Us versus them.
It's tribal.
Tribal. And also, I suppose, especially with rugby, you know they are going through some real physical pain. Like, they are tough people.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, you can't tell me that being tackled to the ground like that does not hurt. Like, it does. I'm sure it does. They just know how to deal with it.
Well, I think rugby's good because rugby, you get that out. You get the aggression out. Whereas football, they sort of tap each other and they roll on the ground.
And they get laggy.
And it can get a bit pent up. And that maybe has an effect on the crowd as well. Whereas a rugby crowd, no, when they're watching it, they're big, hard people going at each other. Yeah. And we're not up to that task, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
there's a higher level of respect, isn't there, I guess? Because you're like,
I'd say so. It's a pacifier.
I wouldn't do that. Respect to you guys who are doing that. As with the footballers, you're like, oh, come on, mate. He's barely touched you. Like, isn't it? And I could be wrong. And someone please correct me, whether listeners or you guys. I'm pretty sure I once heard or read that American football, similar to rugby in some ways, is that it was devised after a war because there was a lot of returning soldiers and they knew that young men needed to get their aggression out.
Really? I don't know that.
No, it was something
to do with, like, yeah, they need... These returning soldiers need something to occupy themselves. They need something to do. And I think because they'd formed these tight-knit communities in their squadrons or their groups, and actually they wanted to continue with that community feel that these brothers have got my back, these guys have got my back as well. So there is, again, that benefit to it that it's good for health-wise, but it's also really good if it is, let's be honest, it's usually young men that are overly aggressive, and it can help to alleviate boredom. I think I was reading one thing that sport is really, really good for bored young people.
Yeah.
And actually you can get them to run around and batter each other instead of people on the street.
Yeah. I think that's sort of psychological thing of being a part of a team or a part of something greater than yourself.
Camaraderie.
Which was why you had those sort of juvenile prison programs, as I said, about the School of Hard Knocks and so on. I think that is learning how to function within a team is very, very important. I find it interesting with sport where it reaches that international level and can cause or aid international relations. Now, I suppose that's quite rare nowadays. Maybe in certain...
This on Rocky IV, are you?
Not basing it. I usually base everything on Rocky IV, but not this time, I'm afraid. But
if I can change, and you could change, maybe the whole world could change.
Exactly, and it turns out that they did.
Yeah.
And the Cold War was won right there and then, Chris, if you remember correctly. But I think when Iran played the United States, I think it was at World Cup 98 in France, you know, they did a whole big thing at the start. You know, there was exchanging gifts and all this because they're so aware of this sport. And actually, the tensions between the countries obviously quite rife. And since then, you know, we've not heard a peep. No, they're still there. But again, they're just aware that, okay, this is a game of football, but if this is a bit spicy, might it inflame stuff? I wouldn't have thought it would from an American point of view, because I think at the time, not many of them gave two hoots about the World Cup. It's a little bit more popular now, of course. But you can find these things. I mean, Algeria and Egypt are great rivals on the football pitch, you know. Like some of the scenes between the games, that happens in the games between those two, and it can spark, like, international... like it can cause violence, you know, and traveling fans go there. It's like, right, well, and again, it's that pack mentality.
Yeah.
But when you have that pack mentality, as you say, Chris, you know, sometimes that's great. And other times, you know, if it's not tended to well, it can spoil over.
we've talked a lot about sort of team sports, but I guess something I'm thinking of around things like, for example, the tennis.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you know, I was thinking about Emma Raducanu.
Oh, yeah.
Winning, was the US Open recently? And I remember for a few days after that, there was a sort of glow, and it was nice. But I do also think when it's a sort of a solo thing like that, and it's, you know, people talk a lot about things like tennis, the mental side of it, mm-hmm. and the intense pressure that comes with it. And so many people crumble under it and end up having all kinds of problems because of that pressure. And at that point, I don't know, I start worrying a bit about how much pressure we put on these people, often very young people. Mm-hmm. And tennis is a classic one for that. You know, and you think about things like in the Olympics, you know, all those young gymnasts and things like that. And the way that people get that, you know, knowing that the nation is watching you, and, you know, there are people tonight who are going to get extremely happy or extremely angry because of what you do. Yeah. That makes me a bit uncomfortable.
I do agree with that. I do agree that, it's that person's career. And I can understand. See, when you talk about, are you talking about Simone Biles? Is that her name?
Yeah.
The American athlete. I found the whole fallout from her stepping down from one of the events in the Olympics, if I've got that right, I found it utterly bizarre. Totally bizarre. You had on one hand people praising her for essentially quitting. And now I know that sounds quite harsh language to use, you know, just, as I said, stepping away from it. Some people thought that was a wonderful thing to do. And other people thought that she was an absolute failure and a disgrace. And I actually found myself not really agreeing with either, because I was a bit like, well, it's her decision. I think that's a shame that she feels that she can't sort of, you know, the pressure that is a sporting environment. Part of it is dealing with pressure, but okay, fair enough. But at the same time, I'm not going to have a go at you for doing that. It is quite odd when you get the reactions from these things. But I know what you mean with sort of solo sports. We're in the Olympics, it's wrapped up as Team GB and
that's true,
and all this sort of stuff. But in reality, it's not a team game, unless, of course, you know, it the individual sports are. It's that person jumping over that thing on their own in their own career with their own trainer, and they just happen to be wearing the colours. A little bit different, you could argue, from, say, a rugby or football or cricket when it's a kind of team sport. Chris, what did you make of all this? I see the cogs going.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sarah's just nice, aren't you, Sarah? Like, I'm just sat there thinking they are doing what they love. Like, this is what they've done since they were kids. Sure. Like, and you know, and they've got to this level and they're going to have a great time. And only one person can usually win these events. So it's kind of part of the game. They would have been through so many tournaments in their life to have got to that level. Hopefully they would have learned to deal with it. I think the Simone Biles is a unique case for many reasons. She is the greatest gymnast there's ever been, I think, isn't she? She was just at the pinnacle, and
she's got nothing to prove.
And she also has suffered a lot. You know, she was the victim of sexual abuse.
Horrendous.
One of the people on the team. I think
the response was probably more political than anything because of what was kind of going on at the time. So I think that that's more of a unique case. In a way, some of these people will thrive on the pressure. Like, I think, you know, Marcus, you've talked about, again, footballers, because that's your business. But like, even if they play each other in ping pong, they want to win. Like, it's just inbuilt, this competition. Absolutely. I am going to win. They'll be playing cards. I mean, so unfortunately, a lot of footballers, they can get into debt, because even playing cards and gambling and stuff, they're so competitive. they just want to win. It's, so I think with the sports, you know, it helps people if they are competitive to get it out. Like anything, it can flip into something being negative. So as I said before, you know, we were looking at doing key messaging and using sports around integration and migrants and refugees. The negative side will be when the crowd and in some countries, the messaging they want to give out is racist and horrible, actually. So, I mean, we're dealing with people, aren't we? That's at the end of the day.
But trying to bring people together, I get it. But that idea of competition, in a competition, you have winners and losers. People will be disappointed. People will be elevated. Do you think that inherently is a good thing or a bad thing for trying to bring people together?
Whether it's good or bad, it does bring people together. That's why we want to watch.
It does divide people, though.
But that's what I mean. It's why we'll watch Strictly or Britain's Got Talent or whatever. Like, it's competition, isn't it?
We want to see the division and the bringing together.
Do you think then that as human beings we sort of need this competition? We need to test ourselves, and actually, having sport is more the kind of modern day gladiatorial arena. You'd rather sporting teams go up against each other than tribes or, you know, armies, without sounding too dramatic.
But do you think then, like, I mean, it's kind of, it starts off as, when you're younger, and as an individual, before it becomes like a spectacle, it's an individual. We are competitive. We love games, board games. You know, I'll play Monopoly with people just because I want to individually compete. And then I think it grows from that. But I think we are innately competitive. I mean, someone who would know more about the theory of evolution would probably talk about there is this competition to survive and to thrive and stuff. It's probably just built within us. And then it's grown into a spectacle.
Yeah. I think that's okay, though, being competitive, but knowing, again, it's how you use it.
And I think it's just knowing where to draw the line and where, and getting a bit of perspective. Because I think, I feel like I'm being the voice of, and sport can be bad. And I'm, you know, there are many sports that I really enjoy, so I'm really not trying to do that. But so, you know, when there are people who care so much about sports, and I mean now supporters and people who watch it rather than the actual players, and it takes over their life to the point that, and I'm not, look, hey, when England lost in the, like, in the Euros and stuff, I get it, you're disappointed, that's okay. But people who just fully lose it and are just horrible, and I've experienced a few people like this, who just, for the rest of the day, don't talk to them. They'll be in a foul mood because their team's lost, or, you know, whatever it may be. And at that point, I just think, that's where, obviously, you don't say it, but you do think, it's just a game.
Yeah.
Like, well, your life is not going to change because X won in the golf.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I'm pretty sure I saw an advert talking about domestic violence around sport. Actually, when we get beat, she gets beat. Like, it's horrible. Like, as you said, people, but that's their internal, you know, they're probably raging anyway. I mean, there's probably an internal anger within them. But unfortunately, they've used sport to alleviate or to escape, and it's disappointed them, and therefore they've taken it out on someone else as well. I mean, it goes too far, but that's what I mean. It's people, isn't it? People are either good or dickheads. Like.
I find it interesting that people want something to follow. They want something to kind of believe in, if you see what I mean. And you're right. If it is someone on the PGA golf tour, it's like, oh yeah, he's my man. Yeah. Hey, look at him, he's brilliant.
He's my god.
People can find that in an individual. Or I found with Emma Raducanu, she's obviously from this country, but I think her father is Romanian, hence her surname, and her mum is Chinese.
Yes.
And she speaks fluent, I think it's Mandarin or Cantonese. I think it's Mandarin.
Such an underachiever thinking about her.
Yeah, she's still a teenager as well. Yeah, but I mean, I think Roger Federer is like a year older than me. And when I think about that, I think I'm sort of Rod.
You've still got time.
Yeah, exactly. I've got one ATP tour in me, I think. But with Emma Raducanu, I found it really interesting that China then immediately went, oh, well, she's one of ours.
Yeah.
It's a victory for China. And everyone's trying to claim her. And it's like, again, okay, fine. Okay. All right. Yeah, that was a victory for China. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Okay. Yeah, it was a victory for Britain. Okay. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah,
it just, it's a different flag that's flown.
You don't, we like, it's not that like we suddenly get, you know, £1 billion for the country because our person won.
Yeah. Well, you say, I mean, in some sport, you could say that there's a financial thing.
But like your person in the street, when their person or team wins the game, whatever the game is, their life isn't going to materially change.
Would you say it's the opiate for the masses, Sarah?
I would never presume to say something like that. I
wouldn't
dare. Let them
eat sport.
Very good.
Wow. I mean, you say that, but during COVID, they brought sport back first to keep us happier.
They did. They did, and
it was very, it was intentional. We're stuck in our homes, but if we've got something like sport to escape to or watch, then that might be better for us. And it did help a bit. I must say, I massively enjoyed having more sport on TV during lockdown because it was something to occupy my very small brain.
Yeah. I to sort of try and maybe come to some sort of conclusion on this. I think you're right. I think that escapism matter? I mean, no, in of itself, if you see what I mean. But then, of course, but in context, yeah, I think we all need a bit of escapism, some more than others.
Did we do a show on this?
I believe we might have done it. It does ring a bell.
It's been a long time now, guys.
It's been a long
time. Yes, because you told us you like computer games.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely dumbfounded.
Oh, yes.
Gosh, but I think it's escapism matched with competition.
Mm.
So in one sense, it's not the escapism of, say, listening to music or I don't know.
Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, exactly. Or playing Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's competitive, I can imagine. But you know what I mean? It's not the same as... escapism of, say, you know, going for a stroll or going listen to me or whatever. It is escapism, but it comes with this pressure. It comes with this competitiveness, which, as you say, Chris, I think is in us.
Yeah.
And I think we maybe need an arena for that to kind of be played out in. You just hope it's played out in a gentlemanly manner. I don't know. Any more? We're done. We all agree.
I think we've reached a sort of consensus.
Is it more than just a game? Yes and no.
I think we've reached a virile climax.
What a finish. What a finish.
We really need to stop this show right now.
It was a happy ending to this week's answer, or questions with questionable answers. Who would have thought the misunderstanding of a word would lead to so much, joy, I would say, and happiness. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're back next week with another podcast, which will hopefully be less smutty than this one. See you then.